Welcome to Net Front Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks. A lot to get to since the last edition of the Net Front. Some good, some bad. So it goes for the Blues this season as they fight that gravitational pull of 500, which has proved to be quite strong so far. But we'll go with the latest news first, Matthew. The Blues frustrated with the power play that let them down against the Florida Panthers. Drew Bannister making some notable changes both to the power play and even strength alignment. Let's talk about the power play. It's a tough topic. It's a familiar one to listeners of the Net Front, but it appears Coach Bannister is going to try some different things.
Yeah, the biggest change to me is Colton Parayko quarterbacking the top power play unit. That's something that we haven't seen all year. It's really only been one game this year that he's actually been on the power play, and that was putting him in his one-timer spot against Vancouver. He did practice in that position before that Carolina game, but when the game happened, they opted for Verana in that spot. So having Parayko as the quarterback on PP1 was the most notable thing to me. I mean, this year we've seen at even strength, he's been willing to shoot the puck. I mean, the numbers point that he's shooting the puck more than he has in the last two or three years. And it's obviously resulted in some goals for him. You know, seven even strength goals is among the best in the league for a defenseman. So whether that translates to a power play and distributing the puck or creating scrambles at the net front, we'll see. But that was kind of one of the things that Drew Bannister talked about. Was he said, yeah, we just need to have more of a shooting mentality, and that's what Parayko brings. And, you know, the numbers are just odd for this power play. You know, in terms of offensive zone time, they're fourth in the league. In terms of faceoff percentage on the power play, they're second in the league. So it's not like they don't have the puck or they can't get into the zone. They're just not generating enough shot volume when you look at shot attempts, shots on goal, expected goals, all those things that we always talk about. So there is some sort of disconnect there. And, you know, maybe Parayko having a shooting mentality can help there. I know in the past, sometimes he's been a little bit hesitant to shoot, but this season so far, we've seen him kind of fire that thing.
Yeah, a couple things to note. It seemed like this power play had been steering a lot of the shot attempts to Torrey Krug, and that is not Torrey's thing, right? Torrey's is a playmaking power play quarterback. He's looking to set up teammates. You know, he's does not have a giant hammer, and yet the way the power play was working, the shot volume was starting to come, shot attempt volume is starting to come from Torrey, which is not optimal. But nothing else was working. And if they tried one more time to jam a pass into the middle to poor Braden Schenn surrounded by three guys, you know, it was getting hard to watch. It was happening. I mean, the ghost of David Perron haunts this franchise, the lack of that one-timer. Snuggerud can't get here quick enough. I hope that for his sake that he's spending 30 minutes after every Gophers practice, they're just doing one-timers from the circle. And he's got a laser. We saw that roll junior. The guy's got a laser now. We'll see. But they can't get another shot in here fast enough. So my only concern about it, Matthew, is, yeah, he can shoot the puck, but he shoots a lot of head high or higher shots, Colton. So if I'm Jake Neighbors and I'm net front guy,
yeah, you better watch out, right? I actually probably try to ask Neighbors about that today. What's it like to stand in front of the net when Parayko is winding up, and do you kind of say a quick little prayer before the shot goes off? Yeah, I mean, it's when we talk about the one-timers too, like I feel like Kyrou does have a decent shot from there. I mean, he rained the crossbar the other night. It's just the willingness to use it consistently hasn't always been there. I mean, as you mentioned, that little bumper play to Schenn, like Kyrou was one of the guys I was trying to force that into the middle there. So yeah, I mean they could use some more shots from the side there. And I think about their last power play goal was Robert Thomas on a one-timer, you know, when he popped out to the circle from the net front. And, you know, there's two other main things that they changed on the power play. One, they added a little bit more of a net front presence by moving Jake Neighbors from the second unit to the top unit, putting Oscar Sundquist on the second unit at the net front there. Sundquist has played that position before on the power play. Not that he's been overly productive at it, but he has experience doing it. And Jake Neighbors is just kind of learning how to do it. When I've talked to him before, in junior in the AHL, he kind of bumped around to different power play positions. But a lot of times he was on the half wall, on the flank there, making plays. And so when you're at the net front, your back is to the net, and it's a different perspective that you have to get used to. So, we see him going to the tough areas at 5-on-5. We see him at the net front on the power play. That just doesn't mean that it's a fully formed product yet, right? So, those are two big changes. And Drew Bannister mentioned, like, yeah, we've missed some net front presence on our power play. And then the other big change that I want to just mention is Scott Perunovic and Tory Krug on the same unit. Those, for the most part, when those two guys have been in the lineup, they have been quarterbacking different units. This is the first time we'll see them on the same one.
Right, and I think Brunovich is very, very much clearly just a passer. He is a playmaker. So now Krug's gonna, the shots I was discussing that he was taking on the first unit, he's gonna get the chance in a different slot, a different spot on the ice to shoot, because they'll need him to assert himself on the second unit. And I don't mind Shen on the second unit. Just look for some shots, pound some shots. And we all know Sundquist is willing to sacrifice his body. That's how he's made it this far. It's a personal peril at times, but he'll do that. He'll set screens. So yeah, I don't mind any of that. It was frustrating to watch against the Panthers, but we have seen some progress, incremental progress under Drew Bannister that kind of screeched to a halt. And it's interesting, Matthew, that Drew Bannister is not that far into his tenure, but clearly he's shown some patience, granted some opportunity, but we're seeing him make changes because, he's trying to get this te keep this team in the chase.
Yeah, I mean, with just to be clear, I mean, I think they're 5 for 30 under Bannister, which is
That's outstanding, Matthew. Come on, that's huge.
I mean, it is actually almost double what they were in the 28 games before him. That's 16% compared to 8.5. So it is a little bit of an improvement, but still would be kind of a mediocre power play overall. So it's not like they haven't improved. They just haven't improved enough to the point where you'd say, let's see this power play that can get him back in the game, that can give him a lead. They've had 12 power play goals all year. I saw a note the other day that Sam Reinhart, when he scored against the Blues, it was his 14th power play goal himself. And of those 12 power play goals for the Blues, only one of them is a game tying goal. They have not scored a go ahead power play goal at all this year, and they've only scored one game tying power play goal, and that was Robert Thomas's. So when the Blues have needed the power play, when they've needed them in big situations, they haven't come through other than, that one Robert Thomas goal in Pittsburgh.
So you're saying that Brad Richards is not quite ready to get a big bonus for this improvement since coming on board as the consultant for the power play, but he can take a pat himself on the back to a degree because this is not historically bad. Well, it kind of is still overall, but the last few weeks haven't been just historically bad, which is where they were for 28 games. So.
Yeah, and like I struggle with what Brad Richards' influence is overall. Like, is it just an idea here or there? Because he was with the team in Florida. He was at the game in Tampa. He was at the game in Florida, with the team, watching the game with Doug Armstrong and maybe the coaching staff. I'm not sure about that, but it's not like he's in St. Louis every day talking to them, talking to players about what he wants to see, coaching them. He's really just communicating with Steve Ott. This is something that Drew Bannister mentioned yesterday. I mean, they'll go over the clips, they'll go over the chances, they'll go over any changes that maybe they'd like to make. But in the end, this is, Steve Ott's job, right? This is his job to coach the guys, to put them in right spots, to watch them at practice, to see how it looks in practice, to oversee, what happens in the games and stuff like that. So, while they, I think it is noteworthy that they brought Brad Richards in as a kind of like we're trying something move. I don't want to overstate his influence on the overall power play.
And I just want to add this. I think it was I was in Chicago, and Chris Kerber comes up to me and says, "You know why?" He's probably done this to you too. He's like, "Can anybody explain to me why Colton Parayko is not on the power play?" with his shot. After watching game after game of guys reluctant to shoot or not shooting particularly well, he's like, "Does anybody explain this to me?" And I know the explanation was, "Well, he's logging all these other tough minutes, and you're saving him for penalty kill and." Defensive zone starts and matching up against top lines is already logging, 22, 23 minutes a night, blah, blah, blah. But now give Kerbs credit. If this works, they should give whatever at least some of the Brad Richards money should go to Kerbs. He's already under payroll, doing a hell of a job with the broadcast side. Just saying. It's like he just shows you sometimes it's not that complicated.
Yeah, I mean, if Curbs can figure it out, probably not that complicated, huh?
No, Kerbs. We don't want to insult Kerbs. I just want to give the
No, I
man
love
credit. If
Curbs.
this works, we're going to have to give him credit. It's like, come on, why are they not? He was just like, well, I gave the usual company response. They're saving him for this and that. They got all these other guys who can do it, blah, blah, blah. It's what these other guys do well. They got to find a role for these other guys who do this well, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, didn't work for like a half season. So here we are.
Yeah,
All right,
and just.
moving on. Moving on. We got to bring up an unhappy topic. I'm shocked. Shocked to see that. Ron is out of the lineup again. Shocked that there was a horrible turnover. Shocked that it came at a terrible time in the game. Shocked that he got called out by his coach, and shocked that it looks like he's back in the press box.
Gordo, are you shocked?
I'm shocked. Shocked.
I didn't pick it up there. Yeah, it was a little baby step forward against Carolina, and a bigger step backwards against Florida. When he got called up and he was practicing with the team that one day before they went to play the Hurricanes, he was on the fourth line. He did not have power play time. And the message was, you're gonna have to earn your ice time. This is how it is for people here, and you're gonna have to earn your way up the lineup at even strength. You're gonna have to earn your way onto the power play. And then in Carolina, we saw that a little bit. He, as we mentioned earlier, he was on that second unit instead of Colton Parayko. He was moved up from the fourth line to the third line at times against the Hurricanes. And after the game, Bannister said, like, yeah, he's kind of earning a little bit of my trust. He was working hard. He was making some smart decisions. And so I trusted him with a little bit more minutes. And it wasn't like he's out there playing 20 minutes, but it was a small thing that you could say, all right, this is a step forward. This is a building block for a guy who hasn't had many building blocks this year. But the turnover in the third period against Florida, I was a little bit surprised about Bannister's reaction after the game. Basically, the question to him was, where did that game kind of get away from you guys? And, his answer was directly pointed at that turnover. So it was something that he brought up on his own, and he was very passionate about, felt very strongly about. And then at practice yesterday, Verona back as a scratch, and I expect him to be that way against the Rangers tonight. And there's a week left in Nikita Alexandrov's conditioning loan in Springfield, and so the Blues do need an extra forward in the NHL just to have an extra body around. Right now that's Vrana. Could they swap them and bring someone else up to sit? Maybe, but if you have younger guys playing down there, maybe you just want to keep them down there. And when Alexandrov does come back, I wonder if we're done seeing, Verona in the NHL for a little while again. I wasn't sure he'd be back last time he went down, but he did come back, and it was a quick one. It's a quick short leash. So it's been disappointing for pretty much everyone. I think. Yeah, obviously the Blues bought low on him last year, but the returns in the production after the deadline were encouraging coming into this year, and You really thought that there would be something there for him to prove in a contract year, and just hasn't taken. So, I don't know what they could even kind of fathom at this point. He is what he is basically, and that's not a great thing for the Blues right now.
No, I mean, it's look, this is all about moving forward as an organization. And it was a stopgap move. It's not working. His contract will expire. Life will go on, right? I mean, maybe somebody else takes a look at him at some point, but you know, it's unfortunate. It seems like a nice fellow. He's been through some things. You hope that it's again with him, you just hope that the most important thing for him is that he keeps himself in a good place as a person. And if the hockey doesn't work out in the NHL, he'll keep playing for a long time in Europe. It's just you know, just it's a tough league. You got to play with an edge. You got to play with a high effort. It's pretty easy to fall out of the mix in this league with talent coming in every year, and it's just the reality of it. Some guys play their way out, and it looks like that's going to happen. On a completely opposite positive side, Nathan Walker not only returns but gets a contract, and to me, extension. To me, this is about. You know, everybody likes Nathan, right? The teammates like him, Chief liked him. Obviously, Drew Bannister likes him from what he had earlier, his earlier work with him himself. Jim Thomas loved him. Everybody loves Nathan Walker. He's a minimum wage guy. You're trying to, it's just all about trying to maintain a certain, you know, again, I wrote about again culture because a lot of teams just can never seem to find it. A lot of really good, young, talented teams don't have anything like what they need to play in this league. Blues want to build that. They want to reestablish it. They want to have a foundation to build on. Guy like Walker is your extra forward or is your fourth line guy with his personality. You know what you're going to get from him. You know who he is. You need a piece like that in your mix. It's a small piece. It's a low cost piece, but it's a piece. And you know, and seeing so many teams struggle to build any sort of personality, including this one at times. That's to me where it makes sense. The low pay and the fact that he can add a certain element to your group going forward, you've got some sense of who's on the bottom of your roster, who's going to fill that spot that you need to have to balance your budget.
Yeah, it is a little bit of certainty. It is also kind of an odd deal. They've done a few of these recently where you have a 2 year one-way deal for more or less a bubble guy. We saw that with Mackenzie McEachern in the summer when they brought him back on a, you know, two-way one-way or 2 year one-way deal at the lead minimum. We saw them, you know, when they signed Tyler Tucker over the summer. It was 2 years at, I think it was 800,000, and then you know Hofer, when they signed him to his extension last year, it was a 2 year lead minimum deal. So they've had a recent history of signing, you know, the one ways on a 2 year at a very low cost, just to kind of lock in some sort of cost certainty. And you know, it's a deal that's it's not going to hurt you, right? If you need to send him down, you waive him and send him down, and it won't count against your cap. And if you need to have him in the NHL, you can fit him under the cap easily with that cap hit. He gets a little bit of more security. I mean, this is his first multi-year one-way deal. Everything else has either been two-way, where he gets paid differently in the AHL and the NHL, or it's been kind of a 1 year deal where you don't know what's going to happen next. And for him, you know, he was scheduled to be a UFA in the summer, and now he has that security knowing that he has 2 more years in the same organization that he's been in for quite some time now. And it's something that if you need him to be a veteran on the top line in the AHL and producing down there, he can go do that. And if you need him to fill a fourth line role in the NHL at times, he can do that. So the term was the only thing that jumped out to me as a little bit different, but it makes sense for him and for the Blues in a way.
Yeah, and that term, by the way, makes them nobody's claiming them on waivers, right? With that second year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I haven't really thought of it that way. I mean, yeah, maybe so.
Could be. It's a deterrent. It rewards the guy, and it's also a deterrent. And again, you're trying to bring all these guys in. one by one that you're hoping can make a difference, and you got guys down in, Springfield now trying to learn the game. You need guys like Walker. You just do. And without guys like that, your teams don't develop properly. And there are a number of NHL teams that did not develop properly again this year as a result. So something to keep an eye on. We got to talk about with Philly coming into town. There are unambiguous answers to questions, and then there are really, really unambiguous detailed answers to questions. So, Matthew, try to explain break down the whole kerfuffle with Kevin Hayes and the Flyers and Carter Gauthier, and just a podcast causes a lot of havoc. He addressed it. Torts addressed it. Cutter addressed it. Danny Briere addressed it. But still, I loved the response from Hayes.
Yeah, it was pretty unexpected. Honestly, so just a little inside baseball on how these things sort of happen. So after morning skate on Tuesday, they open the dressing room and reporters are allowed to go in there and talk to players. And so Hayes was just getting finished undressed, taking his gear off, and it was like he was about to go take a shower. And I'm walking up to him and he goes, "Hey, do you need me?" I say, "Well, if you want to talk about Philly," and he sat down and that was his response. And
Oh.
in 2.5 minutes, he just kind of just kept talking and talking. It was pretty calm. Started out pretty calm and just kind of explaining things, and then it turned into being pretty fired up about calling it a little bit of BS and talking about getting death threats and people that are happy that his brother Jimmy is dead and things that just shouldn't be happening to a human, especially someone who's been so open about his brother's death. So it was a little bit unexpected that it all just happens like that, but he deserved a chance to respond after the report on I guess it was Monday night that said he had influence on Carter Gauthier's decision not to sign with Philadelphia. And of course, Gauthier was traded to Anaheim for Jamie Drysdale and a second round pick. And that was part of the reason because he wouldn't sign in Philadelphia. And Kevin Hayes was kind of vilified in a way because they both went to Boston College and they went golfing one time. And it was just an odd situation overall, but something that we don't see too often is players coming out being that honest, and I really I think we all should appreciate the honesty there.
Yeah, it seems the situation with Cutter was that, he's in college. He's got leverage because he can string out college and, he has some control over a situation. In the previous, it seems as best as Elliot Friedman could figure out so far, NHL insider, that the previous Flyers regime was a little lukewarm about getting him pro, getting him signed, getting him going. There was some concern about some bonus overage or whether they wanted to start his clock as early as Cutter wanted to start his clock. And so that was the root of the problem. And by the time Keith Jones and Danny Briere got control of the hockey operation, the ship apparently had sailed. And so somehow somebody in the organization thought it would be a good idea to pin all this on Hayes. And here's what I'll give. John Tortorella stands up for Hayes, said, "Look, we didn't get along. We had a disagreement about how he was playing and how I want him to play, but Kevin's a good guy. He's a good man, and don't do this to Kevin." So he stood up for, as much as they had a disagreement and Kevin needed a fresh start because of that, Kevin Hayes, the person, John Tortorella backed on this. And that was, I thought that was meaningful. And with the Flyers coming to town, it's good to get all this cleared.
Yeah, it's that should be an interesting morning skate when they're here on Monday. From what I understand, I don't think their whole beat writer group travels, so I don't know how many people will be here in St. Louis to talk with Hayes about it, but who knows, maybe it's dead by then anyways. That'll be a week past, and after John Tortorella talked about it last night, and Hayes talked about it a few nights ago, and Gauthier mentioned it yesterday in an interview with the Ducks in-house media. He said, yeah, Kevin Hayes had nothing to do with this. I wonder if it's even a story on Monday when the Flyers come to town. I'm also curious when the Blues go to Philly in March, like, how do the fans react? Will they have seen this past weeks of denials and defense and say Hayes is okay, or will they kind of give it to him based off of the report from Crossing Broad on Monday night?
Not a Flyers fans. They're probably not going to give him a warm welcome. This is not. It's not St. Louis, so I'm guessing he'll probably hear it. But it's given everything that Kevin's been through and his family's been through, getting booed in Philly would be the pretty low on the list of things he'd be worried about. All right, a couple more things before we let you go here on the net front. Boy, tough games. The Rangers are kind of a 500 team for the last month, but they were dominant for the first couple months of the season. Very talented group. Looking to gain some traction. Then you got, like I mentioned, Boston c coming in, just a machine. Even if Omark's hurt, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who retires, who's hurt. They're just a machine. And then a better Philly team. The challenges still keep coming. I guess the one positive we saw here recently, and going back in time a bit, and you wrote about this, Jordan Binnington played really, really well, after getting his break, and got him some really tough points against good opponents.
Yeah, and this is, I think, this Rangers game will be game 7 of 8 against teams that I kind of look at and say they're either contending for a cup now, or they were thinking they could contend for a cup at the beginning of the season. Looking at you, Pittsburgh and Carolina, essentially. But every other team is right there at the top of the standings. And yeah, the Rangers are an interesting bunch. I'll get to Binnington in a second, but the Rangers, to me, like, I know Doug Armstrong has mentioned the Los Angeles Kings are the mold that he wants to emulate, but the Rangers, is that a completely different situation that the Blues can't emulate? Is it because they got the number one pick, they got the number two pick, they had Fox want to go to New York, they had Panarin want to go to New York? Is it something that is completely not applicable to the Blues in the way that they turned it around pretty quickly? I mean, this was a team not long ago that was drafting 1 and 2, and suddenly they're in the top five in the league. They went to the conference final a few years ago. Like, they turned it around quicker than most. But is it kind of a something that they can look at and say we can do that, or is it just completely different situation because, the Blues aren't in New York. They haven't got the 1 and the 2 pick, and I don't know. It's just something I was thinking about recently.
Yeah, and the thing is, the turnaround's come, even though the young guys they drafted, they're helpful, but they're not the reason why this team's really, really good. They're there, but yeah, it's boy, that Panarin. How this guy ever left Chicago, get moved? This guy is so talented. The bread man's so talented. But anyways, on to Binnington, whose job it will be to contain the bread man, who's not only passing the puck better than anybody in the game off the wing, but now he's shooting the puck too.
Yeah, and Binnington, so the biggest difference to me, I feel like there are minor differences, but the biggest difference between Berube's results and Bannister's results has been the goaltending has been really good in this short 11 games. I mean, there were the hiccups for Binnington against Chicago and in Tampa. But outside of that, the goaltending has been pretty good for the most part between him and Hofer. And when he came back from the Christmas break, Binnington, I mean, he had a good game against Colorado. He was pretty good against Vancouver and Carolina. So I'm sure it was surprising to him that he didn't get that first start out of Christmas against Dallas. I mean, do you have the 3 day break, and you expect teams to go back to their number one after the break, and the Blues come out of it and go to Joel Hofer? And since that break, Binnington's been pretty good. I expect him to start against the Rangers tonight, and I think he's kind of performed well, and we've seen him at times this year go through that where he has 3 or 4 game stints of playing really, really well, We saw it against Vegas. We saw it at the first few games of the season. But he's also had some downturns this year. We've seen it against, I want to say, Arizona, out there, in Tampa. There have been some rougher games too. But as of right now, he's going pretty well, and that's a big boost for the Blues.
All right, so we ended on a positive note. This edition of that front, generally more positive than the last one, although probably marginally so because we had to start with all the power play chit chat. So that was a bit of a downer. But we'll see if Jake Neighbors survives this his net front presence with Colton Parayko firing missiles. We'll find out. Be a topic for the next edition of net front. A reminder that you could get all of our podcasts, our videos, all the extra content on STLtoday.com, all the stuff that we can do online that we can't do in the wonderful print edition. We're going to have a lot of stuff, by the way, on STLtoday.com. You may have heard there's going to be a winter warm-up. We're going to have a lot of baseball updates as a result of that, in addition to ongoing hockey coverage as the Blues attempt to finish this tough stretch on a good note. For Matt, I'm Jeff. Reminder, keep supporting us. Tell your friends about us if you're not seeing us on the website. Tell your friends to look at our website. If you're seeing us on the website and your friends they have podcast apps, tell them to find us on the podcast app as well. So until next time, for Matthew, I'm Jeff. See ya.